Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia, solartopia, solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found.
Oh, yeah.
Don't you know we're gonna have,
we started to burn too many things we found. That's the wonderful Dar Williams singing with Pete Seeger and David Burns, the Solartopia song. We're back with you here at PRN for another fabulous hour with Harvey Sugo Wasserman. That's me. We're talking. I'm actually in Ohio now, but my guests are back in California. And we're going to talk about civility in politics to start. I mean, I know it's uncivil of us to have to do this, but I did have a really good conversation with my buddy Lance Simmons, who's one of our guests today. And we thought, since I have met Maxine Waters a number of times, I do want to discuss that. We also have Andrea Grossman on with us, Andrea Leon Grossman, a wonderful activist, again, from Southern California. And we are going to go through many, many heated topics, including the heat wave. It was 115 degrees at the Burbank Airport a few days ago, 115 degrees. I can't even begin to conceive of 115 degrees, but that's what it was. And we're going to deal with that. I do want to be glad and celebrate the fact that Donald Trump is out of the country for a while. Over making a fool of himself and us in Europe. And, I do agree that the United States is over paying for NATO. I think we ought to drop out of NATO. We ought to dissolve NATO, bring all our troops home, and install solar panels all over the United States. That's what our troops should be doing. Our entire U.S. Army, Navy, Marines, Air Force, Coast Guard, and now the new Space Patrol that Der Trump wants to put in power. We want to take all those people, all those men, all those women, and install solar panels on every building in the world. And that will give us what's known as national and global security. So, Donald, if you're listening, maybe you can figure out I know what we'll do. Every solar panel that we install, the U.S. Army installs, will stamp Trump on them. And we'll pay Jared Kushner his royalty. And maybe that way we'll, and royalty being a term, a double entendre here, and we'll maybe that way we'll get the Earth to solve our global warming problem and get these oil and gas companies out of our pockets. Lance Simmons, are you with us?
I'm here. How are you, Harvey?
Good. I'm here, too, but we have different hears. Andrea, Leon Grossman, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Thank you for having me.
Well, you're great. I had both of you on KPFK. You both passed the audition, and we're really happy to talk to you today here at PRN, the Green Power Wellness Show. And I want to thank our crew in New York for keeping us on the air and keep us podcasting. This will be posted, and you guys will get a URL, and we can send it all over the Internet while we still have one. So let's start with Maxine Waters and civility, and we'll start with Lance and Andrea. You're welcome there to jump in on this. Lance and I were having a heated discussion in heated Southern California the other day about what Maxine Waters said after Donald Trump, issued a death threat and a few other little civilities. Lance, tell us what you think about this whole controversy about civility in politics.
Well, first of all, I spent over 40 years in politics, public policy, and government positions. I had a 40-year career. And when I've been interviewed over the course of those four decades, time and again people will say, well, what's the biggest difference since you came into government, which was 1978, and today, whether it be 1978, 1980 or 1990 or 2000 or 2018. And I would I consistently say, when I went to work in the United States Senate in 1978, I witnessed close-up an amazing thing. And it was an ability to actually accomplish things. And you would accomplish things by reaching across the aisle. Now, back in those days, the Democrats controlled Congress. But there were times when you had to work with other members, not only in the Democratic Party, but in the Republican Party, and things actually got done. And I witnessed firsthand the ability of people to fight like hell on the floor of the United States Senate and to slap each other on the back when they walked off the floor and to play cards later that night and to go to social functions and to actually have civil conversations and to have civil debates in committee hearings. And I worked on the Senate Budget Committee for 6 years in a very contentious time. And we have lost, we have absolutely and totally lost that ability to conduct ourselves in a civil manner, to practice the art of comity, C-O-M-I-T-Y. And these things are absolutely essential for our representative democratic with a small d system to work. It's the way that our Constitution was put together. It's the way our government was put together. And in years when I used to teach college, I used to say to my classes in American government, if you don't remember anything else from this course when you walk out the door, I want you to remember these three letters, CSI. And everybody's, you know, watches TV, so you know CSI. Oh, yeah, I can remember that. I said, remember that the entire system is built on compromise, which is C, sausage making, which is when you witness public policy or legislation being made, it really looks ugly. It's like going to an Oscar Mayer wiener plant, which I have done as well. And when you, if you saw hot dogs being made, you would never want to eat them. But somehow, when you put it all together, it tastes pretty good. And then, so that's the S. And then the I is incrementalism. The way that we get things done in this country, we're not a parliamentary system, so we don't swing wildly. We get things done in a very slow, deliberate, and incremental manner. And that's just the way that the system's put together. And it only works if you have civility. And that right now we do not have.
Well, what do you think is the primary historical reason for the transition? What caused us to lose civility?
I think that at least over the second half of the last century and the beginning of this one, we have seen such a corrupting influence of money in our electoral politics and in our lobbying and in the way that things get accomplished. Things that do get accomplished don't get accomplished by legislators. They get accomplished by lobbyists. There's such a pervasive and corruptive influence of money in our political system right now that it works against civilized academic debate.
Very interesting. Andrea, are we on Grossman? What do you think?
Yeah, I completely agree. I think money has made a huge difference. And I do agree that in some way we should compromise, but there's some things that we just should never compromise. And some of the things that we have seen on TV, especially when it comes to human rights violations, I don't think that's something that we should ever compromise on. When it comes to environmental law and rules and regulations, I mean, what we saw happen in Flint with water, and they still don't have safe water. I mean, how much lead would you like on your water? I mean, how about zero? And I think that's fundamentally what is broken with our system. One of the things that I really admire about Food and Water Watch, the organization I work for, is that we take absolutely no money from corporations or the government. So that allows us to remain objective about the battles that we take and the positions that we take. But that's not the same for, you know, a lot of other organizations that end up compromising, and then the positions are reflected on that. And unfortunately, it gives cover to a lot of politicians, and that happened with the latest cap and trade bill that we had in California that was basically written by Chevron and the oil companies. And there were a few organizations that are called green, and they gave cover to a few politicians and said, hey, you know, but these other organizations said that it was okay, so it's all good. But the vast majority of green organizations were opposed. But that's not really what the public sees. So that's a really bad thing. And again, I think there's some things that could be compromised, but there's some things that shouldn't be compromised.
All right, so I'm going to put in my two cents over here. I think what really destroyed civility in American politics was the Vietnam War, because it was such a horrifying atrocity, you know, based on so many blatant lies. And you had a psychopath in the White House, Richard Nixon, and a semi-psychopath before him, Lyndon Johnson. You had five assassinations where we really didn't know. Well, Medgar Evers, we knew who killed him. We don't know for sure who killed John Kennedy. Got a vague idea about Malcolm X. We don't know who killed Martin Luther King. We don't know for sure who killed Bobby Kennedy, except we do know it wasn't Sirhan Sirhan. And I can tell you with almost 100% certainty that Lee Oswald did not kill John Kennedy. So I think you have injected into our politics from 1963 such a psychosis that was then heightened by Nixon, clearly a crazy person. And now, of course, we have someone who's beyond crazy in the White House. And I think that really has had a devastating impact on our politics and on our country. And I think that's one of the reasons, as a historian, that we can see a decline or disappearance of civility, is that it's just gotten so crazy. It's hard to think straight and to deal with people on, since the government and since the powers that be and the dark forces and the dark money have so thoroughly infiltrated our lives, I think it's hard to be civil. And we have, and what prompted this discussion between me and Lance was Maxine Waters coming out, and Lance, I have met Maxine, I think you know Maxine, coming out and,
yeah,
and saying,
I
hey.
I know Maxine very well. I've known her for 25-30 years.
Well, she's a great, great lady. I've met her with my children. She's incredibly gracious to my daughters. And I just want to say that, okay, you know, well, I'm not going to express too much opinion, except I believe at this point, you guys talk about, you know, she's basically issued death threats by the guy in the White House. And I find her response, well, Lance, do you tell us? What do you think?
Well, I have a great deal of respect for Maxine Waters, and I've worked very closely with her through numerous Democratic National Conventions where, going back to 1976, I've worked 9 of the 11 Democratic National Conventions on the podium, and each year I handle, as part of my duties, the women members of Congress. So I have a great deal of respect for her, and I like her a bunch. I disagree, however, with her recent position about challenging people to disrupt certain politicians, whether it be at restaurants or at movie theaters or on the street or whatever. I have absolutely every ounce of support that I have in taking these people to task in the appropriate settings. I don't think that we ought to be stalking people in restaurants. or stalking people in public, I think we can make our points appropriately, but doing it in the right forum and having some degree of decorum in doing it. Just because we have a president who is a Class A schmuck and believes in getting down into the mud and calling names, you know, calling people names and having these little outbursts, these Twitter tantrums, that doesn't mean that we need to match him on that level. I think we can go high when they go low and succeed.
All right, Andrea, what do you think?
What I think is happening now is that a lot of the avenues that we have taken in the past are either being curtailed in a way, you know, with net neutrality being curtailed, like what is that going to do to our freedom of speech? You know, taking to the streets is not as effective as it used to be. There's many things that are just not as effective. But now we've seen, I mean, we just saw what happened with Scott Pruitt. And I think really the last drop was the mom approaching him in a restaurant. And I think, I mean, it was disruptive, but I think she was still respectful. And I think that's what Maxine was alluding to. One of the signs that I carried when I actually took to the streets at the Immigration March was one of the most popular ones with the Maxine Waters on it that read, "The only thing necessary for evil to triumph is for a good woman to do nothing." And he had a picture of Maxine Waters, and it had a hashtag Team Maxine, and people were really loving it. And I think that's kind of what I get from Maxine Waters. And I must say that Maxine has been really a leader in many, many fronts, from environmentally signing on to the OFF Act to get off fossil fuels by 2035 nationally, to, you know, social issues and making sure that bet on Trump, pun intended, us. Because seriously, I mean, we're basically having this president who is misogynistic and just wants to, you know, do away with every right that we have. And we, someone has to stop him, and someone has to be inspirational. I think that's what Maxine wants to do.
Well, I got to say, I like both your answers. I have relatives who were lost in the Holocaust, and as a historian, I've done a great deal of study of Nazi Germany and how Hitler came to power. And I think it's interesting. I'll tell you this story. I had I was teaching cultural and ethnic diversity here in Central Ohio, and I had Abe Weinrib, who lived to be 102, and he was picked up. He's about 5 feet high. Picked up during the first week of World War II in September. 3rd or 4th in his home in Poland. He lived 5.5 years, God knows how he did this, but in the death camps. He was in Auschwitz twice, this guy. And they found him at the end of the war. He was lying on a pile of bodies at Bergen-Belsen in Hanover, Germany, concentration camp, where his job had been to drag dead bodies into the pile. And he fell asleep, and when the British came, they just assumed he was dead, and no, he wasn't. So, and he lived, he went to Sweden and was in the hospital for a year, because he doesn't remember a single thing about being in the hospital. Came to the United States in 1948 or so, lived in Columbus, Ohio, and he came to teach my classes. And I asked him if he thought that the United States would become a fascist country. And he immediately said, no, which really shocked me. And I asked him why, and he said, the reason is the country's too diverse. Too many people, too many Hispanics, too many Muslims, too many Jews, too many Buddhists, too many this, too many that. And that they'll never be able to unify us under a single dictatorial ruler. And I was encouraged by that, actually. And the other difference between America today with this fascist, and he is a fascist in the White House, and he's not our president. I never call him president. He's not legitimately elected. And the other difference is that people are standing up. And, you know, and they're not serving dinner to, what's her name, the press secretary. And Scott Pruitt has been forced out of office after, you know, doing enough destruction to seriously question the survival of the human species. And the people are marching, and we know what we got in front of us. I mean, in Germany, the only really minority group in Germany, I mean, there were Slavs and Gypsies, but the Jews in Germany are only 1% of the population. In the United States, it's 15%, between 15 and 20% black, between 15 and 20% Hispanic, between, I don't know, 5 and 10% Asian American. There are 8 million Muslims, 5 or 6 million Jews, 1.5 to 4 million indigenous, depending on how you count that. And people, we know what we're looking at here. We know we're looking at Hitler, again. And we know what Hitler did to Germany. And we know we need to stand up. Now, the question is, are you civil? And what is civil? Is it uncivil to walk up to a fascist cabinet member in a restaurant and say, hey, you know, I get this, this, and that issue? Now, of course, you don't want to start throwing food, and you don't want to be violent. But I don't think Maxine was advocating violence. And she's very clear she wasn't. And she did. And I got to tell you, this is what prompted the discussion with Lance. I remain extremely angry and disgusted with Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. Because when Trump came out, he essentially issued a salt law. You know, he says Maxine Waters, he called her, you know, I'm not going to repeat what he called her. It's too disgusting. It's clearly racist and sexist. And he just spouts off. He just did the same thing to Angela Merkel. He's a million times smarter and more worthwhile as a person than Donald Trump. And I was extremely disturbed that Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi didn't jump on him when he said what he said and then turned around and jumped on Maxine. And I found that extremely disturbing.
Well, let me just weigh in here on one thing.
What do you think?
First of all, I am not averse to speaking up. Believe me, I have spent an entire lifetime losing jobs by speaking up, and I am not averse to having very very heated. But you can have heated and civil argumentation and debate. I'm all for that. I think it is a very dangerous, slippery slope, however, to get into the notion of deciding who it is you're going to serve in a restaurant, because you could just follow that right down off the cliff. It could be, well, I'm not going to serve that person because they're black. I'm not going to serve that person because they're Catholic. I'm not going to serve that person because I just don't want to. I'm not going to serve them because they're a gay couple. I think that is very dangerous, and I would not support that. I would support the idea of giving every individual the opportunity to participate in a free society. And I don't want to start picking out who it is I'm going to discriminate against, because I'm against discrimination in all forms. So I get a little problem with supporting. Don't serve that person because they don't think like you.
Okay, I can buy into that. Andrea, what do you think?
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree. Just because, you know, we have different ideologies, I'm not saying you should not, you know, either do business with someone or serve them or, you know, sell them whatever merchandise. But, you know, as long as it's a free forum, I think, you know, people have the right to be in places. So, I agree with that statement from Lance.
All right, let's do this one more round then. I want to expand on my discomfort with Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi, not just because I think they were insufficiently powerful in defending Maxine when Trump issued his ghastly usual garbage against her. But even more so now, it's a great quote from Buckminster Fuller, who says the way to change an evil is to provide, not necessarily to confront that evil, which I disagree with him, he said that, but to provide an alternative. And the real question we're facing, I think, in preventing a total fascist takeover in this country is that the Democratic Party is not offering an alternative. What do Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer stand for? What is the Democratic Party offering in opposition to Trump? I mean, we're fighting with one hand behind our back. On the one hand, okay, Trump this, Trump that. We don't have to go through the litany. But on the other hand, they're not offering an alternative. Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer are not supporting Medicare for All, as Bernie does. And, of course, they're doing their best to marginalize Bernie. They have not allowed a younger leadership contingent to come up in the Democratic Party. You know, they rigged the 2016 primary race because Hillary already owned the Democratic Party. And in my mind, we have a so-called opposition party, which is not an opposition party at all. Or half an opposition party. They're saying Trump this, Trump that, but they're not saying what they stand for. They're not giving people a reason to oppose Trump in terms of an alternative reality. Lance, you want to comment on that?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think you've been absolutely right for many years, and I am as loyal a Democrat as you're going to find. I've worked from my entire career for liberal Democrats. But we do not have a message. And I think that Bernie Sanders went a long way in 2016 towards injecting and infusing some policy parameters in a message like we haven't seen in a long time. I think that this young lady in the Bronx, I might get the name messed up, but I think it's Anastasia Ocasio or whatever. Yeah, the 28-year-old woman that won the primary, the congressional primary in the Bronx. She won on a platform of laying out distinctly a set of policy priorities that she stood for, and it started with Medicare for All, and it went down, the list to, cover education and environmental issues. That's what the Democratic Party is missing. Now, I know that there are certain members in the Democratic Party from red states that we have to be somewhat careful. We can't just throw all the people that don't think exactly like us on every issue. But we have got to stand for something. I couldn't tell you what the hell the Democratic Party stands for right now. It is beyond my comprehension that we cannot encapsulate five or six or seven key issues, starting off with Medicare for All. By the way, I go on Medicare in 3 weeks, and I didn't know if I was going to be able to survive to ever see this day, because the difference, the comfort level from having to pay your own insurance, which I've been out of the workforce for a couple of years, so I'm paying my own insurance, to getting on Medicare is just absolutely stunning. It's stunning. And why we can't and don't use that as the basis for our platform is absolutely beyond me. And it was the biggest problem that I had with Obama. I had a couple problems with Obama. The biggest problem I had was the negotiations which had us Democrats, taking the public option off the table. I could never understand why that made any sense, and I think we really did ourselves a grave disservice, and we ended up getting, maybe a quarter of a loaf with, maybe half a loaf with Obamacare. But I absolutely agree that we need a message. And unfortunately, and I'll take a lot of crap for this, But unfortunately, we got to get some new blood into the Democratic leadership because we're all old.
Well, speak for yourself, Nance. I'm a mere 72, and so there you go. Andrea?
No, I completely agree. I mean, Ocasio-Cortez is a prime example of what we really need. We need a leader who's going to come and say, okay, enough is enough. We don't only get, for instance, again, going back to our energy issues to get off fossil fuels, but what we need is clean, renewable energy. What we need is not, you know, a failed healthcare system. What we need is Medicare for all. What we need, you know, and that kind of goes to the heart of the issues that we're having. And it's just not enough to say we're opposed. We need to resist Trump. We need to say what we're for. And I think we're seeing that more and more throughout the Democrats. And I think that's something that we need to change, and we need to change it fast, because people really need to see what we stand for, not just what we're against. I was just reading this morning that Crowley, who's who was the one who lost against Ocasio-Cortez, is going to try to run as a third-party candidate, which, again, is not going to help, in the party as a whole, and that could actually trigger a Republican to win that seat. And we need to be really smart about how we can win elections and how we can get progressives to help us as a country and help the progressive movement move forward.
I mean, Harvey, you and I are old enough to remember a time when if you could go to college in California, you went for nothing.
Well, I think there's, I know, and that's the way it should be, absolutely. We're talking with Lance Simmons and Andrea Grossman, two great California activists. I want to say, you know, the reason for this problem is the same as we discussed before, which is the lack of civility, which is money. And I thought I had read that the guy in New York who lost to this young woman was not going to run again. I know his name is on the ballot, but he said he was not going to campaign.
He doesn't want to concede.
He hasn't conceded?
No.
So why is it that Al Gore...
Oh, wait a minute. He got beat pretty soundly. He has no basis not to concede.
Right. But there is...
He didn't lose. It wasn't even close. He lost by like 10 points, didn't he?
Yes.
So why is it this guy won't concede, but John Kerry rolled over for George Bush? Al Gore rolled over for George Bush. Hillary Clinton rolled over for Donald Trump. I mean, three of the last five presidential elections have been won by Democrats who walked away. And now this guy doesn't want to concede?
You have to ask him.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Medicare for
I have to, I have to check into that. I hadn't heard that he was considering running as an independent. I think that would be a terribly destabilizing thing for him to do, and I hope he doesn't do it. I mean, the woman won fair and square, and she won actually running on issues. I mean, that was kind of, you know, I was trying to project over the phone my disbelief that you can actually run on issues and win.
Right.
Well, that's why Bernie Sanders, I mean, I've heard Bernie speak a number of times. I just heard him in downtown L.A. The line was around the block to get into the theater in downtown L.A. Bernie graciously came out and spoke to the people who were not going to get in. And then, I've heard him, and every time that I've heard Bernie Sanders, it's all about issues. He doesn't give campaign lines, applause lines. He's not up there, you know, doing that rah-rah stuff. I mean, he's basically about business. And that's what people want. And that's where we're sick of Pelosi and Schumer. I don't know why Nancy Pelosi thinks she wants to be the Speaker of the House again. I mean, it's not going to happen. People don't like her. Schumer is a complete wimp, rolls over for the banks. You know, there's just no leadership in the Democratic Party. And is it because they're completely corrupted? I mean, the Clintons, Bill and Hillary, sold the Democratic Party to Goldman Sachs and the New York bankers in the 1980s, around the same time that Donald Trump started laundering Russian money. And that's another thing. Even Colbert, who I love, does not raise the real reality of Donald Trump. It's Putin this and Putin that. They never make the connection. It's not, and Colbert mentioned it again last night, it's not this tape that they allegedly have of Donald being urinated on by a Russian prostitute. It's about the fact that Donald Trump owes everything he has financially to the Russian mob. I mean, he's a terrible businessman. He's gone bankrupt, what, four or five times. And in the 80s, he started laundering Russian mob money, and that's where Putin came from, and that's why Putin owns him. And Putin, of course, you got to remember that Putin is a very smart guy. I read the interviews that Oliver Stone did with him. You know, people want to refer to Trump as Don Corleone. He's not smart enough to be Don Corleone. He's Fredo.
Harvey, can I just I wanted to get one thing in. You tried to draw a timeline on where this change in civility took place, and you placed it at the Vietnam War. I would take some issue with that, and I was an anti-war demonstrator, and I was drafted. And, but I think that in my lifetime, the dividing line was 1980. Now, I ended up working for Jimmy Carter. Whatever you want to say about Jimmy Carter, Jimmy Carter went on national TV in 1978 and talked about our energy crisis being the moral equivalent of war, all right? But in 1980, when Carter lost to Reagan, we saw a dramatic shift in, first of all, we also lost the Senate that year, you remember. We saw a dramatic shift in these ideologues coming to Washington with no experience whatsoever. I watched them. I watched the guys on the Senate Budget Committee that I was working on, guys like Dan Quayle and Grassley and Kasten and Sims and all these guys. They didn't know what the hell they were doing. They didn't know anything about government. They didn't believe in government. They thought government was the problem, not the solution. Now, whatever you have to say about how corrupt Nixon was, and God knows I thought he was the first Antichrist, he still believed in the power and the levers of government. Remember, we got the EPA under Nixon. All right? So the real change came when Ronald Reagan ran on the platform that you got to get the government off the backs of the people. And that, and the subliminal message, not even subliminal, the overt message there was government is the problem, not the solution. And we've had this period where even the Democratic Party has fallen prey to a little bit of that, particularly in some of these states, you know, like the West Virginias and the Montanas and the North Dakotas, that, you know, we have to be a little careful in what you do to get elected. But we used to have good liberals from those states, from some of those states. I mean, we had George McGovern from South Dakota.
And we had Mike Mansfield from Montana.
So that's where I draw the line, by the way. I've seen a distinct change in attitudes towards government. It used to be big government, small government. But in 1980, it became government versus no government.
Right.
Well, what Reagan was really saying was we need to get the government off the backs of the corporations that were sponsoring him. I mean, specifically General Electric. And, you know, that's when all the campaign finance laws went down the toilet because of the Supreme Court, and money just completely ran roughshod through the whole system. Andrew, do you want to comment on that?
Also was for deregulation and also was for personal tax cuts too. I mean, people actually did see changes in their in their taxes. So it was largely driven by corporations. I agree, but it wasn't so far removed from the people that they didn't see it. The difference with Trump is he didn't make any bones about it. All the tax breaks go to big corporate America, and all the tax breaks go to the upper 0.1%. The poor
right.
schlub on the street doesn't see anything, and is not going right. to see anything. In fact, they're going to see tax increases when it comes to what we're seeing right now, increases in gas taxes, increases in gas prices. So. So I would put the line of demarcation at 1980.
Well, that's reasonable. Andrew, you want to comment? I don't think you were born in 1980.
One of the things that I think is worth noting is Carter was the first president to put solar on the White House roof, and Reagan was the one who took it down. And
right.
I think that was also part of the war against clean energy. And basically the boom of oil and gas, and Obama was the one who made us the number one producer of both oil and gas. Right now we're basically in this race against time to make sure that we keep as much of it in the ground and without burning. Otherwise, we're going to have more of these heat waves like the one that we just had over the weekend.
All right. Well, let's talk about that. We could talk forever about the politics stuff. Let's move into the real McCoy here. I left Southern California to come back to Ohio a couple weeks ago, just on a family visit. But I read, and I guess you guys experienced, that it was 117 degrees at the Burbank Airport. I don't think you can fly in when it's that hot. They must have shut down the airport, but. Andrea, we'll start with you. Tell us what's going on with the heat wave in Southern California.
Well, it was really interesting because one of the things that happened actually on Thursday, LADWP issued a statement saying they were ready for the heat wave to provide enough power to all ratepayers, and you know, no one should be worried about having enough power. And then Friday came about, and we broke every record on the books by 10 degrees, 12 degrees. It was just insane. And the thing is that, I think Woodland Hills had 117 degrees, and we had a mail carrier die on the job. And I did not know that actually mail carrier trucks don't have air conditioning, which I think is obscene. But the problem was that, yeah, we did have enough power. The problem with DWP is that we have an aging infrastructure from the grid and the wires and everything, so that was what failed. And then next thing we knew, we had over 50,000 customers without power, and that meant that even at night the temperature dropped to a bone-chilling 90 degrees. So, I mean, how are you supposed to sleep with nine? And that was in Santa Monica. I mean, in the valley was like still 100 degrees at night. I mean, how can you even sleep with 100 degrees in your house? So, and there was a lot of places where you cannot even go because, again, if you have no power even around the corner, you cannot go to a hotel around the corner. So you really have to travel far away to go and stay at a hotel if you can afford one. So there was a massive failure in terms of the infrastructure, and that's something that we really need to address, especially now that the city is considering updating its community plans and considering putting even more density, because the infrastructure is failing us, and it's not just electricity, but it's also water. So how can we add more people when we cannot even service the people that we already have?
Lance?
Anybody who has one half of an ounce of a brain, I'm saying this to anybody out there who has one half of an ounce of brain, knows that the planet is warming. It's happening right in front of our very eyes. We don't have to wait 20 years. We don't have to wait 50 years. It's not just an inconsequential rise. It's going up
in an exponential fashion on a very, very steep slope going upwards. And when you look at how the planet has been warming, particularly in the last 10 to 15 years, I think probably 9 of the 10 hottest years ever recorded on record have happened in like the last 10 or 12 years. This is happening, folks. We've known it's been happening. We can see it coming. It's coming faster than we thought, even in our worst-case scenarios. The Paris agreements were nice try efforts, but they didn't even come close to getting near the problem. And we pulled out of that, for God's sake. So it is happening. Humans are responsible for it. Population is a huge problem. What is probably more problematic, however, is the fact that this Earth cannot sustain one United States of America, let alone two or three or four or five, and everybody's trying to emulate us. So in India, you've got a middle class, which is larger than the entire population of the United States. China is experiencing an economic boom. We have got to get a hold of our addiction to fossil fuels. I've been making this argument for 20 years now. I was one of Gore's first climate change messengers. I've known Gore for 40 years. I established the first Office of Sustainable Development in the United States government in 1993. It was an Al Gore initiative. It was put in the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Prior to 1993, we did not have an Office of Sustainable Development in the federal government. So I've been at this for a long time. We have, and what I've been saying for most of those years, and I worked for the governor of Pennsylvania for 8 years when we went fracking crazy against my recommendations. I lost. But we have got to say, should we reduce our dependence on oil? Well, of course we should. Of course we should. But that's not going to get at the problem. We've got to reduce our dependence on fossil fuels. Fossil fuels is the problem. And you know, we've got natural gas just, you know, absolutely inundating us and creating methane, putting methane into the environment, which is in the short term, over the next 50 years, is far more dangerous as a heat-trapping element than carbon dioxide. So we are not addressing the problem. We're making great strides on solar energy. We're way ahead of where we thought we were going to be, and we brought the price down considerably. We're making minimal progress on wind power, but we're still going hog wild on fossil fuels, and the day of reckoning is just getting closer and closer, and we see it every year as we experience these massive heat waves and massive severe storm surges.
Right. Well, the good news is, Lance, as you mentioned,
rising sea levels.
The good news, as you mentioned, Lance, is that we have made enormous strides forward in renewable energy. The technology has just had an astounding upward curve in terms of efficiency, and downward curve.
What even the most positive projections were just 10 years ago.
Right. Now, Andrea, we were in a meeting at the L.A. City Council a while ago with the DWP, the Department of Water and Power, trying to get them to adopt a 100% renewable plan. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. So LADWP has they have to put together an IRP, Integrated Resource Plan, every 2 years that they have to now file with the state. And what we were petitioning, or, you know, we had a motion for them to study 100% renewable
for this year's IRP. And that motion was tabled, but DWP did agree to study 100% renewable energy for this year. But again, the devil's in the details. We don't know what renewable portfolio standard they're going to use, and that's one of the things that we really want to get to the bottom of it, because there's right now, for instance, if you sign up for 100% renewable energy with DWP, you get 100% biomass. And what that is basically burning wood and releasing all that carbon into the atmosphere. So we don't believe biofuels are the solution. I mean, they're actually part of the problem. Biomass is burning, you know, wood, or you could also be burning trash. Biogas right now, there's a big push by SoCalGas to build up all these digesters up and down the state at factory farms so that we can actually get more of these built out everywhere, both factory farms and incentivizing waste, so that we can collect all the manure and get biogas that is also really high in sulfuric acid and build up more pipelines so that we can get more methane out of those farms. And again, what we need to do is stop incentivizing waste and stop burning methane. What we really need is clean, renewable energy. So what the plan is first of all, incentivize efficiency, demand response, and then, of course, all the electricity has to come from clean sources, and that's solar, that's wind, and that's geothermal, and existing hydro. But we really need to shut down anything that burns, like, you know, methane or biomethane and nuclear. So that's what we really want to get to the bottom.
And I see from your Food and Water Watch, got a great headline here, hard to digest greenwashing manure into renewable energy.
Yes.
You know, and I have to say that a lot of this is because of Obama. He was elected to do certain things, and he came up with this insane energy policy, all of the above. He gave an $8.3 billion government guaranteed loan to the Vogtle nuclear plant, which was a complete disaster. And now, of course, Trump is giving them more. Trump also wants to bail out all the coal and nuclear plants in the Midwest. It's utterly insane, but that's what we expect from him. And, you know, and we still have in California, we have the two reactors at Diablo Canyon, which is a terrible, terrible a threat to all the people in California, especially in Southern California, which is where the wind blows. And we also have the DWP, the Department of Water and Power, publicly owned Los Angeles utility, which owns 10% of the three reactors in Arizona at Palo Verde, which we got to get the DWP to sell off. Lance Simmons, what's your take on this?
my take on it is all of the above was really a disappointing proposition under Obama. But boy, that would even look good compared to what Trump's idea of making America great again is. I mean, opening coal mines and you know, promoting fracking. Although, you know, when Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State, she globalized fracking and natural gas exports and liquefied
right.
natural gas terminals. And until we actually face the music. And the music's dying down pretty substantially here at a fast clip. Until we face the music, which is we've got to wean ourselves off of fossil fuels, all of this other stuff is just window dressing. It really
Absolutely.
Is.
Lance Simmons, and we're getting close to the end here. How do people get a hold of you, Lance Simmons?
Just call me Lance.
and where do they...
My
website?
First of all, I should promote my latest book is an anti-fracking novel, and it's entitled Fractured. And you can reach me. You can go to my website, which is lancesimmons.com. and it's LanceSimmons.com, or you can go to LanceSimmons@Verizon.net, or you can just Google me, you can read. I'm a prolific writer. I write all the time, so you can read what my latest take is on just about anything.
And Andrea Leon Grossman, how do people get a hold of you?
You can actually look up Florida Watch California on Facebook, and we actually have different meetings that happen throughout the month, and I'm usually at one of those meetings. And people usually tag me on the pictures there so they can friend me on Facebook. I actually also wrote two books. I wrote one about fracking in Mexico because, as Lance said, Hillary Clinton promoted fracking worldwide, and that included Mexico. And they even changed the constitution there to allow big oil to come and privatize Pemex. So,
oh, my God. Well, we're out of time. You guys have been great guests. Thank you so much, Crew in New York. This is Sluggo, Harvey Wasserman from the Green Power and Wellness Show, Andrew Leon Grossman, Lance Simmons. We'll be back to you next week in Solartopia. Thanks for being on, you guys.
Thanks. Solartopia.